Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
We're rolling on here, this Sports Talk edition on Friday, January 17th. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, and Charlie Long taking until 7 p.m. this evening. That's when we will sit with kickoff with Boomer and Valente on 105.3 FM. Meanwhile, over on the big 870 AM, the Pelicans are tipping off against the Utah Jazz this evening in the Smoothie King Center, and then they'll turn around, have a little break first, and then turn around and play them again Monday evening. Same team, same bat time, same bat team, Monday night in the Smoothie King Center. And definitely a chance for this Pels squad to realistically string together 4 consecutive victories, considering how bad the Utah Jazz have been so far this season. And right now, we've seen this Pels squad heating up in the new year, which has been a huge positive. We talked about it last hour, just playing competitive basketball, and it's nice to, you know, be excited about the team in the third quarter instead of going, turn it off, and I'll just see the box score later on.
Yeah, and especially with a guy like DeJounte Murray, you know, I don't think anything went the way he hoped it would go to start this year. You know, obviously he had the family situation right before the start of the season, and then breaks his hand in the opening game, like a really nice game, a win over the Bulls. I think it was the Bulls. And then
you
see him starting to come, like he was on fire at the end of that game the other night, and you could tell he was just confident, you know, and he's a much better shooter than I realized coming in from the Hawks. And I think it's just because you kind of think of Trae Young, and Trae Young is the sharpshooter, but he can pour it in when he needs to. And if you can get a kind of a trio, a 20-point average out of DeJounte, Zion, and Trae, you know, you got something.
No, I'm happy for the team. I'm happy for the fans, and I'm happy for us covering the Pels as well, that, you know, some positive news, you know, swirling around this team after a, you know, dismal start to the year. And hopefully, 2025 can be a little bit different for the team. I think, you know, trying to get to the play-in is a bit out of reach right now. I won't say never for a team, but you would pretty much have to win more than 500 of better than 500 the rest of the way right now. It'd be a pretty miraculous turnaround for this team if they were able to do that. And
I mean, you would have to win 75% of your games the rest of the way. I mean, what would it take to get to the play-in, to get to 500?
Yeah.
If you got to 500, that would mean you would have to, you know, there's 40 games left. You would have to go 30-8. I'm sorry. That actually wouldn't get you. You would have to go 31-9 to get there, to get to 500 from where you are right now.
All right. So maybe
that sounds
really possible there.
A little unrealistic. The Suns and the Warriors are currently tied for the 10th spot. Suns are ahead. They're 20-20. So like a 500 team is probably going to be that 10th spot. And it's a pretty, you know, normally that 10th spot is below 500. If you look over in the Eastern Conference, the Bulls are the 10th seed at 18-23. So it's kind of doubled up with the Pelicans' worst year in basically franchise history. Since they become the Pelicans, they have not won fewer than 30 games in a season. They're going to have a real hard time getting to 30 wins this year. Maybe that's the challenge. Maybe that's the, you know, what are you watching over the final 2 months of the season?
Avoid the worst season in franchise history.
Can you avoid winning the fewest games since the New Orleans Pelicans were a thing?
That's a good goal.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice to say that.
This weekend, we got playoff action in the NFL, and then Monday is the big national championship game. Notre Dame taking on Ohio State.
3 days of football right there.
Right. We had, what was it, four or five days last week.
Yeah, but those were the bad games. Right. No, seriously, the wild card round games, like, it's fun because it's playoff football, but in most cases, you're getting the type of games, you know, that you were getting. Like, you're getting one team that's overmatched and maybe shouldn't be there. Whereas, you know, you look at all these games, and other than maybe, you know, Rams-Eagles, I think the Eagles are going to win that going away. I think the Eagles are...
Really? I think that's going to be a field goal game for me.
I think that the Eagles are my Super Bowl team. I think the Eagles are getting there. I think it's going to be Eagles-Ravens. And I don't know. Although Buffalo might have the best home field advantage of any team in the NFL, because, like, they don't even have heated field. You know, like, that field is like concrete. Like, it's frozen, and they know how to play on it, and that's the biggest difference.
Saints head to Buffalo next year, right?
They do. They do. And Buffalo's building a new stadium. You know what they're not doing?
Dome.
Putting a roof on it.
Yeah.
Get the heck out of here.
They want to keep that weather advantage, in their favor.
It's brutal, man. Like, I'm just praying that's a September game, because if you have to go up there in January, because, like, Green Bay is cold. Buffalo's even colder. So anyway, it's just, and they got the Bills Mafia thing going on. You know, they jump through tables and are lunatics.
I mentioned that the Saints play the Bills next year. They also play at Miami Dolphins, right?
Yeah. So you get both ends of the spectrum.
No, I was going to say there's a chance. We don't know yet. It was named today that the Dolphins will be the first ever NFL game in Madrid. So get that passport, maybe ready.
I think the NFL like wants people to watch that game. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Come on, man.
I don't think so. I don't think they're gonna have an international game this year. I feel like maybe next year. But
the one in France is, yeah, I know, yeah, that a lot of people are predicting that.
If the NFL has any common sense, they'll send the Saints to France
with the fleur de lis.
Yeah, I mean, and they're like the, you know, the cultural ambassador or whatever. Like, we already, that already was established. That would make sense to me. Sending the Saints to Spain would just, it would be, you know, confusing. It would be mixed messaging. Barcelona. I don't know. But these four games, man, like,
yeah,
these
heck
are
of a trip, though.
All excellent games. Again, I'm feeling pretty good about the Eagles. Like, the defense and the run game, I just don't, like, this is when that really comes into play. You know, the Packers,
They look sloppy as heck that game.
I felt like they were a good team, and the Eagles took them apart. Now, they also took out all of their wide receivers. That's how that helps if you knock out the entire opposition's wide receivers. But I don't know. You know, the interesting thing that stands out, you know, you talk about sacks all the time, right? All we talk about sacks. Look at this. You know, all of these teams, all four of these teams, the highest sack total is, do you know it? Do you know who has the most sacks in these four games?
I would guess it would be the Eagles.
Nope.
No.
Well, I'm talking individually. The player with the most sacks out of all four of these teams, these four playoff teams.
Who is it?
Kyle Van Noy, the Ravens. Okay. 12.5. Like, sacks in general were not very high this year. I think teams and quarterbacks in general are getting better at avoiding them. Like quarterbacks are just more athletic than ever. They understand how and when to throw the ball away. They run for 2 yard gains instead of 6 yard losses. You know, and like, you look at like the Bills, like, this great defense. Their leading sack getter is Greg Rousseau, who the Saints could have had, by the way. Like, he was on the board when they took Peyton Turner.
We'll be talking about some draft mistakes they've made.
Yeah. Odafe Owe, 10 sacks. You know, Braden Fisk is leading the Rams with 8.5. Josh Sweat leading the Eagles with 8. Dante Fowler is leading the Commanders with 10.5. Like, you don't see these gaudy sack totals that you used to see. Like, I feel like for a while you would have, like, it was a given you were going to have 18, 20, you know, someone pushing that number every year. And
right.
You just don't see it as much anymore.
We're going to get into the Buffalo Bills with their beat writer, Jay Skursky, right after the break. Stay tuned here on WWL. We'll be talking about that matchup against the Ravens and also Saints interest in offensive coordinator Joe Brady right after the break here on WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting ready for playoff football, and one of the games, probably the premier game that everybody's looking forward to this weekend, has the Baltimore Ravens at the Buffalo Bills. To help that break us that all down with us, Jay Skursky, the Bills beat writer for the Buffalo News. Jay, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. How you doing, man?
Yeah, busy is a good way to describe it. You know, this game, as you mentioned there, is sorry about that. As you can tell, I'm driving here and dealing with a little traffic. But, yeah, this game, as you said, is, you know, probably the most hyped of the weekend, and that leads to a lot of work, but a lot of fun work, and really looking forward to Sunday evening.
I'll get the weather question out of the way first. What's the expected conditions like for Sunday?
Yeah, cold, really cold. Imagine that, right, in Buffalo in January. But, no, we had a fairly big snowstorm last night. It's been clear today. It's actually rather pleasant right now for Buffalo in January. It was sunny and in the 40s today, but the temperature is definitely going to drop on Sunday. I think the game time temperature is expected to be in the teens, and with the wind chill, it's going to be in the single digits for sure. And as far as I know, this is going to be the coldest game of Lamar Jackson's career. I know he's played in, you know, listen, Baltimore is not a warm weather city by any stretch, but it's not Buffalo cold, and this is going to be a new experience for him and for the Ravens. And I do think that there is the potential that is a factor in this game. I don't think it's going to be very windy, which, you know, but even a few miles an hour when it's that cold drops the wind chill down. But you know, just the fact that, you know, I mean, we're talking bitter, bitter cold, and so that could be a factor.
You know, it's an interesting conversation, and I saw a tweet today. It was like, the Bills have the best home field advantage in sports, or at least in the NFL, because of they're just used to it, right? And I'm just curious, you know, in terms of the field, and it's not a heated field like some of these other stadiums would have, you know, Do you see that play out throughout the course of some of these games where you can tell like the other team just is not managing the conditions that well?
It's a good question. I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I mean, when the Bills were on a 17-year playoff drought not all that long ago, home field advantage didn't really mean much, right? But now they're really good, and they haven't lost a game at home all season. And so how much of that is the fact that they're really good and they've got a superhero at quarterback versus, you know, I do think that there is a home field advantage to playing in Buffalo, certainly. I mean, the players are accustomed to the conditions more so than others. But listen, they practice indoors most of the time. They do practice outdoors in the stadium on Fridays before the game, so it's not like they're completely, you know, avoiding the conditions. 2 years ago, they lost in the divisional round in the playoffs to Cincinnati in a game that, you know, featured a fair amount of snow. And they kind of made excuses that the weather wasn't good. Well, you know, you got to get used to it. You live in Buffalo. You play in Buffalo, at least. You better build a team that can handle these conditions. And the one thing I would say about the Bills this year is they are built better to handle these conditions than I think they ever have been before under Sean McDermott. That's significant. They can run the ball when they want to, and they can run it when they need to. And that's a really good recipe when you balance it with, obviously, Josh Allen's talents as a passer of the football. So offensively, I think they're in a really good, you know, spot to be able to play in conditions like this.
That leads me into us into the talk about Joe Brady, offensive coordinator. Saints fans have a ton of interest as well because he's being mentioned for, you know, head coaching positions. Just curious your impressions of what Brady's been able to bring to the Bills offense.
I'd say balance is the one word that jumps out to me first when I'm thinking about Joe Brady, just in terms of his commitment to the run, his belief that being able to run the ball will make life easier on Josh Allen. And when you look at the stats that the Bills were able to put up offensively this season, it's hard to argue with those results. And so I think Brady is a very good play caller. I think he's I don't know if I would say creative, because creative, you kind of go to, trick plays and that kind of thing. That's not really Brady. The Bills don't run a ton of that. They just do what they're really good at. They have plays, and then they have sort of options off of those plays, if that makes sense. And so I think Brady has done a really, really good job. My question about Joe Brady is not whether he's a good schemer when it comes to playing football or coaching football. My question is just more about whether he's ready to command a room full of professionals and a room full of men. You know, he does not. When you watch him speak, he is not an overwhelming presence in terms of press conferences and that kind of thing. And that doesn't have to necessarily mean that he wouldn't be a good head coach or anything like that. But to me, I wonder more about Joe Brady in terms of being a leader of men, more so than I do his knowledge of football. I mean, clearly that's there.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, because I say this a lot in terms of like, hey, you know, you can be creative, but if you have to get creative, it means that the simple stuff isn't necessarily working for you. If I could just keep it simple and beat you anyway, that reminds me of like the Seahawks Legion of Boom defense. Everyone's like, oh, this is a great defense. Like, they did simple stuff. You just couldn't stop it. But just getting back to Brady, I'm just curious if you could kind of elaborate on that. Like, because he's in an interesting situation, because he came on as the quarterback's coach. Obviously, he and Josh Allen vibed well. But then Ken Dorsey gets fired. He takes over that role. A lot of times you'll see situations where they'll move on, find a new offensive coordinator. You know, Sean McDermott wasn't exactly in the most stable of ground in that situation. You're kind of, you know, that's usually the step right before the head coach has to figure it out is, hey, we fired the offensive coordinator. Let's figure that out. And then the coach is next on that list. But what was it that, you know, you feel like led to Joe Brady keeping that job? And have you seen him kind of develop that, you know, I don't know what the word would be, but that kind of coaching toolbox over that time?
Yeah, I mean, so what led him to getting the job was he obviously came to the Bills as the quarterback's coach for Josh Allen. He developed a relationship with Allen, and the previous offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, did not have the success that the Bills were hoping that he would have, and it didn't work with Dorsey, and so they decided midway through last season to make a rather big change, and they promote Brady on an interim basis and the Bills go on a run at the end of the year. They win, I think it was 6 games in a row to get into the postseason as the number 2 seed. And so the offense, you know, whether it was Joe Brady, whether it was Josh Allen, whether it was a combination of both, they were able to kind of right the ship and get, you know, get to where this team should be when you have the type of quarterback that Allen is. You know, it was an interesting move, though, because they were so reliant on Stephon Diggs at the beginning of last season. And then when Joe Brady took over, he really sort of was phased out of the offense, that being Diggs. And, you know, that's a bold move for an interim offensive coordinator to take an alpha number one receiver like Diggs and say, no, this isn't how we're going to win. We're going to win doing it this way. And so I thought, you know, Brady doing what he did was really fascinating in terms of, you know, being bold and making those decisions. And then, you know, that goes into this year and the success that they've had offensively. Again, you know, guys, listen, I mean, Josh Allen is a career maker, right? You want to, you know, if Joe Brady leaves and takes a head coaching job, there is going to be a resume, a stack of resumes on Sean McDermott's desk to be Josh Allen's offensive coordinator, because why wouldn't you want to be? I mean, that's just how good the guy is. And so, you know, credit Brady for sort of making Allen comfortable, knowing what he does best, knowing what he does well, and not trying to reinvent the wheel here, right? You know, like, let Josh Allen go be Josh Allen and do his thing. I think Brady's done that really well. And if it ends up in him getting a head coaching position, you know, more power to him and congratulations to him. But if I was Joe Brady, I'd be cautious about what job I'm going to take, right? Because you look at Ben Johnson last year, he was picky. He goes back to Detroit, and he again is a really hot candidate. So if I'm Brady, I'm not taking just any job. I'm taking the right job for me, and, you know, it remains to be seen if that's there for him.
I know the Buffalo Bills and Ravens matched up earlier in the regular season, and it was a run fest for Baltimore between Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Curious how much the defense has changed for the Bills since that early meeting against the Ravens.
Yeah, well, they're healthier. The biggest change is that they've got 3 of probably their 5 most important defensive players, give or take, missed that game. That's linebackers Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard, and then nickel cornerback Taron Johnson. Taron Johnson's an all-pro. Terrell Bernard, I think, last year deserved Pro Bowl recognition. He didn't get it. He dealt with some injuries this year. And then Milano has been an all-pro in his career as well. He's missed a lot of time over the last couple of years, but he's been back here for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I think you're starting to see signs that he is becoming, you know, the Matt Milano of old. I don't know that he'll ever get back to the peak form that he showed, but having those 3 guys is the biggest change, without question, for the Bills. Had they been in the lineup that night late in September, would the Bills have won? I'm not saying that 100%, but I think it would have been a more competitive game.
Sounds like we lost Jay, or he's having some connection issues. We'll try and link back up with him, but bad cell service. Even an issue nowadays, you figure with all the Wi-Fi towers, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, he said he was driving. Maybe he went through a tunnel. but hey, you know, it's good information, and I am fascinated to see. Do we have Jay back?
Yeah, he's back on the line. Sorry, Jay, we lost you for a sec.
Jay, you there?
Yeah, no worries. I'm sorry about that. Okay. I don't know just how much you heard, but the point I was making there was that those 3 guys, Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, and Terrell Bernard, being back in the lineup for the Bills, they all missed that game against Baltimore in Week 4, I think is going to be a big difference maker for the Bills. I'm not saying that they would have won with those guys in Week 4, but it certainly would have been a more competitive game, and that's what I'm anticipating on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's interesting to me in this matchup specifically is there's a few quarterbacks in the NFL that I feel like you get a certain version of them during the regular season, but there's always this kind of level, there's a leash on it of like, hey, I don't need to do that right now because the worst thing that could happen is I get hurt in Week 5 and the season's over anyway, or get hurt in Week 15 and the season's over anyway. And, you know, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, I would put at the top of that list of like, you get a different version of them in the playoffs when there's, you know, there's all the stops are pulled out and you're just like, all right, go get it. And, you know, I'm curious if you kind of see that out of Josh. And then, you know, on top of that, I feel like both of these quarterbacks are also in that same mold of, hey, we all agree these are MVP caliber quarterbacks, but at this point, neither can point to the postseason and say, I am a playoff winning quarterback. Does that weigh on the quarterback at all? Do you feel like you're getting that a little bit in terms of like he wants to prove himself? Or how do you see him approaching this game?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only speak for Allen, and I don't see that really at all. I mean, Allen has been historically great in the playoffs. The reason that this team has lost in the playoffs is not Josh Allen. I mean, it's the defense. The defense has failed this team multiple years in a row in the playoffs. Josh Allen has done, with the possible exception of the divisional round loss to Cincinnati a couple of years ago, which I don't think that was just a couple of weeks after DeMar Hamlin had gone into cardiac arrest on the field, died on the field, quite frankly. And I just think that team had hit an emotional wall and it went about as far as it could have gone. And I'm not using that as an excuse, but they were outclassed by the Bengals in that game. Outside of that, though, Allen has been excellent in his playoff career. The reasons that the Bills have lost games in the playoffs has, I don't want to say nothing to do with Josh Allen, but very, very little. He has taken his game, which is already at a very high level, and found another way to even, you know, exceed that level. And so, but to your point, there is going to be that narrative about it, right? Because legacies are defined in the postseason. And so for Allen, for Lamar Jackson, this is a massive game. Like they have to, you know, they borderline have to win this game or else that storyline only becomes louder. The confusing thing to me a little bit is that Lamar doesn't maybe get it a little bit more than it feels like Allen gets it a little more. And Allen's numbers are, like I said, just really, really good in the postseason. So either way, regardless, for both of these guys, this is going to go a long way toward defining the type of career that they have and the way that they're viewed, not necessarily by their own specific fan bases, who I think are going to love these guys unconditionally, but maybe from the outside observers, they're going to look at the result of this game and it's going to go a long way toward, you know, defining their careers.
Jay, thank you for the time, man. Hoping the best for Buffalo because, man, oh, man, the Bills Mafia here in New Orleans for the Super Bowl would definitely be a sight to see.
It would, make sure that you get some reinforcements at those bars, all right? Make sure you get them all lined up and make sure they're well-stocked down there.
We'll be ready.
Make sure to stock up the Lifetime tables, too. I know that's a thing.
That's yeah, absolutely, all of that, yep.
Thanks again, Jay. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Thanks, man.
That was Bills beat writer at the Buffalo News, Jay Skursky there, helping us break down the Bills at Ravens and giving us some insights on Joe Brady. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we'll get into our triple option feature here on WWL right after this. Back here on Sports Talk, time to get into our triple option feature here. And I'll start things off, gentlemen. We talk about some of the top sports topics going on right now, and it was breaking news just recently that Japanese star Roki Sasaki says he is joining the Los Angeles Dodgers. The old typical case of the rich getting richer, Super Bowl, World Series champs, landing the prize pitcher from Japan, has been coveted and people drooling over this kid since he's been in high school. Let me see stats for his last 4 years. 2.02 ERA, a .88 whip, 524 strikeouts with 91 walks and 414 and two-third innings. Quite a rotation for the Dodgers heading into this year, and definitely I'm sure will be a favorite to repeat as World Series champions.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't even know who this guy is, so I was telling you I'm disappointed he's a pitcher. I wish he was a hitter because the Sasaki bomb's that's a Sasaki bomb! Anyway, we can go from there. But, you know, we got a text here, and I was going to talk about scoring offense and defense.
And then you're like, forget about it.
We got a text says, the next coach we hire won't be here after the rebuild. We're 3 to 5 years out from winning anything. Saints vacancy is worst one in the league. I disagree with that last part. Again, who wants to live in Jacksonville? Like you will not convince me that someone is going to look at Jacksonville and the Jaguars and be like, I want that.
Yes. See, for me, it's like the Jets might have a nice roster, but you can't convince me that's an ideal job considering how the organizations run from top to bottom.
But here's the thing. When you say like, oh, he's not going to be here after the rebuild. See, that's not how you're going to look at it, right? Like, you know, I think Jeff Duncan was on yesterday and Mike asked him about like, hey, why is everyone so quick? You know, what is this quick immediate gratification thing you need? The next Saints coaching hire is not going to be fired after 1 or 2 or even 3 years, right? Like, that's the thing about this hire. You got that with Dennis Allen. Everyone freaked out. Like, oh, we've only won this many games, blah, blah, blah. You fire him. That's not going to be the case. You bring in an Aaron Glenn. You bring in a Mike McCarthy. You bring in any of these guys. They're coming in with the understanding that I'm going to get an honest chance to do this job. Like, you're not going to throw a head coach into a situation where it's like, Derek Carr's your quarterback, maybe. We're $50 million over the salary cap. We haven't drafted well in 5 to 7 years, but you got to win right away or you're going to be shot into the sun. No, that coach is going to get a chance to at least do what Dan Campbell did in Detroit, which, if you recall, what did he go, 3-13-1 in his first season? They started year two, like, 2-7 or something like that. Like, there was a point where he was like 5-21 as a head coach in Detroit. They turned it around. They figured it out. That's going to be the case. So I'm just telling you right now, I'm not going to entertain any, it's terrible, fire him after they go 4-12 or 4-13 in year one, set up to go 4-13. Like, I need people to understand that, to take a step back and be like, this is a, yes, probably a 2 to 3 year rebuild. But you're not going to fire the coach because you lose games during that span. What you need to do is progress and build that culture. But, like, you're not bringing somebody in and saying, this better go well right away or you're going to have to find another job. No. One of the reasons this Stace job is not the least attractive in the NFL is because you can say that Amen. To a head coaching candidate and they're going to believe it because it's true. Okay? So when you say that they're the least attractive job in the NFL and say they're going to get fired in 2 years at the same time, those two ideas are incongruent with each other. One is not true because the other one is true.
Yeah, I laugh that, you know, everyone, well, not everyone, our texter here is being negative already. We even named the new head coach yet. So just pump the brakes and relax.
Well, no, but I agree with the idea that it's like this probably won't go well right away. And we have to mentally prepare ourselves for that.
We won't have that immediate Washington Commanders turnaround.
Well, I mean, you could, and that would be great. But the idea that that's the goal, like that's the baseline that you have to hit, is unrealistic.
Charlie, what you got for us today?
I think, you know, I was going to go with Sasaki, so I had to kind of scramble here, but I do have something that I'll get to in just a second. One thing, Steve, that is pretty funny about the Roky Sasaki situation is that, you know, the Padres had thrown their hat into the ring for him, and also the Blue Jays. And Bob Nightingale, who works for Odyssey MLB Insider, made a really funny tweet talking about the entire situation, saying, now, the Toronto Blue Jays lead all of baseball in silver medals, losing out to the Dodgers once again. Every single time you see, like, a big name kind of free agent on the market, it feels like the Blue Jays are trying to throw their name into the ring, and it hasn't worked out. And it hasn't worked out with now Sasaki going to the Dodgers, which I hate. I cannot stand. It's not even a contract. It's a minor league contract that he signed, too. It's not even like what happened with Yoshinobu Yamamoto this past year, where he signed like a $300 million deal to go to the Dodgers. So I don't really understand what Sasaki's doing here. Maybe like the Padres weren't offering him a ton of money. I'm not exactly sure. But it just feels like all these Japanese phenoms, there's 29 other teams, guys. Let's figure something out.
Sorry,
here.
Can you say that name again?
Which one? Yamamoto?
The one
or
you just threw at us.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
How long did it take you to get that one down?
Not too bad.
Yeah, he's got it down pat.
I'm impressed. Yoshiyori Namanubo?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
No, he's a $300 million pitcher for the Dodgers that signed out of Japan. So, you know, it's him, Shohei Ohtani, and now Sasaki. It's the
Dodgers taking
one.
Over that Asian market,
it's
man.
Ridiculous. It's just like, come on, one of you guys just – and I'm not, you know, saying that anyone should go to Seattle, right? But go to the Padres or someone. Just and like I was telling you guys off air, I will never – as an Astros fan, I will never apologize for 2017. I hate the Dodgers. And they just got better. As you mentioned, Steve, the rich get richer.
Boo.
What I was going to go with here, guys, though, you know, all that aside, the Pelicans versus the Jazz tonight. Mm-hmm. The Jazz have kind of owned the Pels historically. And it's really kind of a weird thing because it feels like the Pelicans have had some good teams recently. And the Jazz, post Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert years, haven't been very good. But they still pick up a lot of wins. And so this is my entire point of bringing this up. In their history, they played 76 times. The Jazz own a 48-28 advantage over the Pelicans. And that includes two straight wins for the Pels last year, by the way. The Jazz had just gone on like a 5-game winning streak against the Pels, and the Pels broke that around December 2023. So I'm not going to say that I'm worried about this game tonight necessarily because the Jazz are missing so many players, But history tells you that this could be maybe a little bit more competitive than the Vegas line would suggest, which has the Pelicans as 11.5-point favorites tonight in the Smoothie King Center.
I saw that and almost fainted. I was like, what?
Once again, it's because the Jazz are sitting pieces. If like you guys were talking about this earlier, the Pelicans aren't going to tank this year. If you want to see a team that's tanking, look at the Utah Jazz. They're just sitting, you know, Lauri Markkanen's injured, but they're sitting like Walker Kessler for rest. They had an off day yesterday. It's not like he's playing a back-to-back. I don't know. So it's a couple pieces that aren't going to be playing for them. They're shorthanded. You know, the Pelicans should be able to pick up an easy win tonight in the Smoothie King Center. But, you know, history will tell you the Utah Jazz have given the Pelicans fits in their histories.
That's a wrap on our triple option feature. We shall take a break and return right after this. Stay tuned here on WWL. WWL invites you to Guy Fieri's Flavortown Tailgate at Mardi Gras World on the big day of the game in New Orleans. It's the ultimate game day food festival with over 25 culinary experiences, including diners, drive-ins, and drives, restaurant pop-ups, Guy's custom-created culinary concepts, and local NOLA favorites, plus performances by Diplo, Flavor Flav, and Cowboy Mouth. You can register for a family four-pack of tickets at WWL.com/contests. Don't miss the Guy Fieri Flavortown Tailgate Sunday, February 9th at Mardi Gras World before the biggest game of the year. And you can hear it on WWL as well. It hasn't really, I guess, sunk in, or it hasn't felt like, you know, Super Bowl time here yet. I know there's things going on and getting ready for it, but I'm just anticipating, you know, the wild madness that'll be going on in the convention center and all the other events going around the city, and looking forward to just a fun time of football here. And, you know, just curious more too of the after parties going on. The year that the Ravens and San Francisco 49ers were here, got to go to an event at the Howling Wolf. Nice. And seeing Ice Cube perform live, and his son was with him too, so it was a really cool experience.
Ice Cube should only perform in cold weather cities. That's my...
Well, it's funny you said that. It was sponsored by Coors Light, and when you walked into the venue, yeah, it was snowing in there.
Nice.
So it was very, very cool. Nice. Uh-huh.
Well, I'm still in Saints season. I'm never not in Saints season, and we're welcoming in a new audience here. Like, we're going to start doing this for the final hour of our Friday episodes. Is going to be... you know, the Inside Black and Gold Power Hour. That's what I'm going to call it. So we're going to get into that next hour. So I'm excited about that. We're going to be taking questions, comments off YouTube. I also want to get into the Saints draft history, which has been yikes. You know, I started digging into it, so we'll get into this in the next hour. But it's so much uglier than I thought it was going to be when I did. It's not pretty. So, yeah, let's talk about the Super Bowl, because that's depressing. You know, because like you look at it and you say how far the Saints are actually away from being a team that you look at halfway through the season and saying like, this is a Super Bowl contender.
No, that's one of the issues we've brought up before, is the fact that the lack of young talent because of the misses on the draft have definitely put a damper and hurt this team. You can't really say they've swung and missed on any big free agents, at least.
No, and I mean, you look at these teams that are Super Bowl contenders, and like, what do they have in common, right? They have young players who are starring. Like, you look at the, like, you know, who's leading the Bills in sacks right now? Greg Russo. You know who could have been on the Saints? Greg Russo. He was my mock draft pick that year when they took Peyton Turner. I was like, hey,
see, the Saints need to put you in the draft room.
I thought defensive end was the right target. I actually, like, the idea of picking a defensive end in that draft was like, yeah, I like it. Now, Peyton Turner, I have no idea who he is, but hey, maybe I just don't know. And then, you know, 4 years later, you know,
still don't know.
Peyton Turner, you know, and this is kind of a quick aside. You know, the most Peyton Turner story I can tell you is, so he tore his, he had a turf toe, like a really bad case of turf toe in week one of last year. It kept him out until week 18. During that rehab process from turf toe, he suffered a herniated disc in his back and had to have, and he came back and played in week 18, then had to have back surgery in the offseason heading into this season. So he actually got hurt while rehabbing from another injury, and then had to have surgery to repair that. Like, that's just been the if you need a story that encapsulates Peyton Turner's career in the NFL, that's it. Like, even as he's getting healthy, he's somehow getting more unhealthy at the same time. And it's frustrating because, like, I actually think you watch Peyton Turner play, and I understand why they drafted him. But that's just been...
You see the vision, right?
Yeah, that's just been the level of bad luck the Saints have had from a health perspective. It starts to be like, this can't possibly be bad luck. you know, and Sean Payton's out there being like, yeah, you earned that. And I start, I mean, how do you not feel like there's a root cause of all this? And every year we're talking about it.
It's been rough, especially this season. It just, you completely wiped out your offense. And I don't know what folks were, you know, expecting throughout the year. It was tough to see when you're starting quarterback, running back, wide receivers,
all the positions,
Swiss Army knife,
all the positions. Taysom Hill,
right, exactly.
You know, here's one thing that we'll have to discuss. Right, if you cut Derek Carr and you're like, hey, I'm taking this full cap hit this year, we're gonna figure it out. You know who could be theoretically an option at quarterback for a guy for a team that's just like, yeah, let's see what happens.
Hit me. Who you got?
Taysom Hill.
Oh, okay.
Like, why are we ruling that out of hand? Like,
I've seen Sam Darnold. I thought you were going there. I was like, why?
Can he play the way he wants to play at the position you're asking him to do? I don't know. I'm just saying. Think about it and get back to me.
We're going to take a break, head to the top of the hour news, and come back for our final hour of Sports Talk. And you can stream it live on YouTube. We'll be right back after this, so stay tuned on WWL.